We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on, guys? Andrew here with a special Friday quick programming note. The episode you're about to hear, John Schmelk, formerly of WFAN's NBA show, The Putback, and current podcast host, reporter, and media guy for the New York Giants, decided that he needed to get some takes off. And so he reached out to the fine folks here at Knicks Film School to come on for an extended conversation with John and Jeremy about the state of the Knicks and whether there actually is light at the end of the tunnel and whether that light is an oncoming train or not. This is part one of a two-part conversation that you're about to hear. Part one is what you're listening to now, obviously, and part two will be available on this podcast feed. So just refresh your podcast feed when this episode's done and put it next up in the queue. You know, podcast listening 101. I will just say this. If you're a fan of RJ Barrett, buckle up. And I actually think John makes some very great points of conversations that deep down we're all having, but not verbalizing. And shout out to John for coming on to have that. All that being said, hope you enjoyed part one. Part two is coming up next. Here it is. Part one of our conversation with John Schmelk. Are the Knicks in no man's land? Enjoy.
Joining me now on the Knicks Film School podcast, a returning guest. It's been a little while since we've had him on, but this one, you know, it's special when we have this person on. So we had to get not only myself on for this one, but Jeremy Cohen as well. Hello, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm great, John. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. And I'm even better because we get to say hi and chat a little bit with our friend from WFAN. He's not a new dad, but he's a new dad again. How do you say that? John Schmelk, how you doing, my bud?
A little tired, otherwise doing well, guys. It's good to talk to you. And this is kind of the dead period here. After the yearly tradition of getting your heart broken in the lottery. Now we wait for them to screw up the draft, and then we wait for Summer League to give us false hope. So this is exactly the like meat of the offseason.
I forgot how much of an optimist you were. I did. But it's good to hear your voice again, regardless. Congratulations, as I was just saying off air, a newborn, 3.5 weeks old. Have you gotten any sleep?
Yeah, it hasn't been bad. We've kind of split duties. I'm on paternity leave from the Giants. So, the wife's taking care of the baby mostly, and I'm taking care of the 4-year-old. So I'm not sure which one has the worst job, which one's easier and which one's harder, because both have their challenges, Mr. Macri, as you well know.
There's no easy.
No.
There. Not that about any of that's easy. As Jeremy, you'll find out someday.
Yes, you will.
But not for a while. I was about to say. We got some time. I am A-okay with that. But you both have wonderful children, and I'm so thrilled for both of you. But I'm going to watch them afar.
We love them. They're great, but they are freaking exhausting.
I was actually thinking to myself the other day, like, parenting is a lot. Like, I don't know if this goes for every like team that you root for, but for me, it's a lot like Knicks fandom. It's like you wouldn't trade it for anything, right? Precious, absolutely near and dear to your heart. Causes you some pain and agita sometimes. It's some sleepless nights. Just throwing that out there.
No, that look, though, you're absolutely right. And this is the best phrase that somebody used for John. I think you'll appreciate this. Having kids, it's long days and short years. The days never seem to end, especially people like, oh, you're gonna have a fun weekend? Fun weekend. It's easier being at work than being at home with two kids on the weekend, right?
Not even close.
So it's long days, but the years go by like that. So it's long days, short years.
Dude, my oldest one's about to finish kindergarten. I'm like,
oh, what? Wow. My oldest is starting kindergarten in September.
There you go. You'll see. It goes even, starts going even quicker. This is, of course, what everybody came to listen to. So John, I'll peel back the curtain a little bit. We hadn't talked in a while. I think we were probably due for another pod anyway, but you have something specific on your mind in regards to the Knicks and team building, which I think would probably be a good jumping off point for our conversation today. But before we even get to that, because we haven't spoken, I think, all season, right? The last time we spoke was probably last offseason.
No. I think you came on my pod before I pulled the plug on that sucker, probably sometime in January, February, I'd say.
So the season at that point, it really does all blend together, had not completely bottomed out. It was in the midst of bottoming out, probably.
I think you would push the handle on the toilet, but it hadn't completely flushed down the drain yet.
It was swirling.
Yeah, it was swirling. Yeah.
It clogged from there, though.
What are your final, I guess, impressions of the season that we just experienced? Because God knows we've been talking about it a lot over the last few weeks, but what's your input on it?
Unmitigated disaster. I mean,
wow.
I don't know how else you could put it. Like, Julius Randle didn't just regress. He had the worst year of his career. I mean, you look at his efficiency numbers. They were literally, it was the worst year of his career. I mean, all of us thought he would regress, but I don't think any of us thought he would turn into that. Throw in on top of that, the attitude issues and the fact that a lot of his teammates, if Mark Berman's to be believed, and I don't see why he wouldn't be given his sources, that a lot of his teammates got kind of sick of his act. So that's right after you give him a $100 million contract. Now, it was the right thing to do. I was in favor of it. It's still not a terribly valued contract. That's fine.
We all were. We all were in favor. Yeah.
Look, it was a smart long-term play. And look, it's not an unmovable deal. So that's not an unmitigated disaster. It's not good. But, it's not like you just signed Eddie Curry to a 6-year, $90 million extension, okay? So it's not that. RJ Barrett had a worse year than he did last year. I know his point per game went up, but his shooting regressed. He went down to 35%. His field goal percentage was worse, too. And I know
with an adjustment, though, with an adjustment to being a top option.
Yes. Yeah,
different role.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. So I'd say slight. Let me put it this way. We didn't see the improvement I think we would have liked, or at least the sustainment of the shooting we would have liked to see.
It would have been nice to see him as he took on the bigger role to continue the shooting progression from last season. I think that's fair to say. We would have all liked
again,
that.
Again, not even improve, just maybe keep it static, right? Even if that's the three-point shooting went down, maybe the two-point shooting got a little better, something like that. So maybe your aggression was a little strong, but not what you want it to be. Throw in the fact that, now the fans have it out for Tom Thibodeau. And I'm so happy I kind of got off Twitter at the end of the year when I stopped doing the pod for WFM because I was having the second kid. No matter what he did, it was his fault. And as someone that has watched multiple coaches get fired with the New York Giants over the past 6 years, this doesn't go away, right? Unless the team starts like 10-2 next year, which we all probably know is not going to happen. Like, this is not going to end. So the knives are going to be out and they're going to stay out. So this is going to be a problem now with the fan base and the coach. And it's also going to be a problem with the fan base and Randle because the knives are out for him too, right? So arguably your best top player, the guy you're paying the most at least, and your coach, the fans can't stand. Quickly, good year. I think you're very happy with his progression. I think if he's the biggest bright, he's the biggest bright spot to me. The shooting, you'd hope that was a little bit better, but I think the playmaking and the improvement there, I think overall you're happy with what Quickley did. You guys have done a great job talking about Mitch on your podcast. I've been, as I'm doing chores around the house on paternity leave, I'm listening to all your 3- and 4-part marathons here that Andrew's put out. You guys have done a great job, by the way, and congrats on all your success. It's well earned and well deserved.
Blame Jeremy for those.
Sorry for taking up too much time.
You guys have done a great job. Mitch kind of has the Knicks in no man's land here, right? Like, he was good enough where you consider re-signing him, but, not good enough where it's a no-brainer. So what do you do with him? And, Deuce was fine. Grimes, I think, was better than you thought he was going to be. But, yeah, he's going to be a role player, right? You like what you saw from Obi at the end of the year, but the question is, do you believe the three-point shooting bounce? because that was a lot of it. Like, he went from a 20% three-point shooter to a 42% three-point shooter. I mean, is it the more reps? Is it more confidence? That could be it. But, you know, you talk about my optimism. I've been teased too many times to kind of buy this stuff hook, line, and sinker. So, you know, to me, and this will kind of come to, I think, my oversold theory, I was pretty disappointed with the way the year went, because I think the Knicks are kind of stuck in no man's land now, to be honest with you.
I mean, Jeremy, you've talked about the notion of no man's land. We both have over on our pod several times. Like, it's something that I think about a lot, you know, because it has been built up as the exact place that you don't want to be in the NBA. And like, you can understand how the Knicks got here, right? I think we could all understand how the Knicks got here. Like, they had a really successful year in 2020-21. It made sense at the time, I think, to try to build off of that success.
Sure.
As we talked about, Jeremy, mostly, they did it responsibly, mm-hmm. and it didn't really work. And I think it's fair, given those goals, if you want to go so far as to call last season an unmitigated disaster. I don't know if I'd go that far, because I think they did some nice things as an organization. But to me, this is the offseason where they're really going to show their mettle, because like, I think what they did last offseason was like, okay, fine, you get it, right? Didn't work. Fine. Let's go back to the drawing board. I don't know, Jeremy, we haven't talked about this specific thing that much on our pod, but like, what are your thoughts?
We haven't, you know, I'd say that in a world, we've talked about the superstar and the star factor, yes, and the younger players and hoping from there, if the Knicks were in a position where, like, if they didn't have team options on a lot of these deals, if Kemba were signed for another year, if it just seemed like there was a logjam that couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel, mm-hmm. I think I would be much more in that camp. But, you know, again, the Knicks have a surplus of first round picks over the next 7 years. They've got 8 picks. They've got some really nice second round picks, which, again, I know that's not something that is to brag about, but it's something to consider. They're in a position where they will have to trade for a star. Hopefully they can still have someone on the roster, rise to the occasion. Hopefully they can find someone in the draft. But I think that basically the way I see it is, you can try to trade for someone, and then if you plan out your cap space enough so that when the salary cap explodes in a couple of years, you're set up to then add someone in that way. I wouldn't call it no man's land. I would say right now it's like the Knicks are in, it's like you're either a contender or you're tanking, but then there are all these teams in the middle, and they're like 15 teams in the middle.
It's a big
middle. So it's like, is every other team essentially in no man's land to an extent? I mean, sure, you've got younger teams that are on the rise, and like the Pelicans, I wouldn't call them in no man's land. But then you also think about, like, there are restrictions there. How are they able to keep elevating? They have to bank on, like, they have potential, but at the same time, there are pitfalls involved. See, and so I think for the Knicks, they're not in the best position, obviously, because they still need that star talent. But when I think of no man's land, I think of like the Detroit Pistons when they had Blake Griffin.
Or the Bulls now.
Like, those are teams where they're trying to drive, but they're going in reverse at the same time, which it just leaves them stuck. They can't go anywhere. And I think the Knicks have a lot of room to pivot.
Oh, no, Jeremy, you're right. Look, and they're not trapped here. And that's why and here's the thing. Like I said, it was a disaster last year. I still don't think the Knicks did anything wrong. Like, you know, that's just how the NBA works sometimes, right? You do the things you think are best, and it just doesn't work. It didn't work. So I don't think Leon Rose is a disaster. I don't think he's terrible.
No.
You know, I think there are fair qualms with Tom Thibodeau that you can have, but I don't think he's a bad NBA coach, right? I don't think he's a disaster area. So I don't think the Knicks did anything wrong, per se. And the good thing is that because of their flexibility, you're right, they're not trapped here. And I think, Jeremy, I think that was a great segue to kind of, and I think I maybe oversold this as a theory when I sent you guys a DM on Twitter that I wanted to do this.
I got to tell you, you did sell it.
You got to back it up.
Yeah. Well, I think you're gonna be disappointed. So basically my thing is here is that I don't see a way to get to be contender status anytime soon. And maybe you guys can help talk me out of this, because I love you too, because I'd love to be more optimistic here. And I guess
I guess we're the optimists. Right?
I think you guys are, to be honest with you. Macri, I always go for you with optimism, man. What are you kidding me? So for me, the overall theory is that the Knicks are kind of, unless lightning strikes, I don't see how they become a contender within the next 4 or 5 years. And you talk about being in no man's land. If you have your first star, I don't think you're ever in no man's land because you're one star away from contending.
Yes, I would agree.
That's the problem with the Knicks. We thought Randall could have been that guy. And if he was that guy, then even if he was your number two and not your number one, right? Then sure, I think you're in a much better spot here. The problem is now he's your number zero because he's not even capable. The way he played last year, he can't even be a three, right? A number three or a four because he needs the ball too much to be that guy.
Well, right? I think that that's the, not to cut you off, but like the biggest, please. I think the biggest point of, well, it's not a point of difference between Jeremy and I, but like Jeremy sides with what you just said a few minutes ago, which is that it's still not, it's not a bad contract, the Randall contract. Like
no, it's not.
It's not a disaster. And I'm more in the place where like, okay, what is the, who is the team out there that is going to say, that is going to look at Julius Randle and say, if our goal is to win a championship, to actually, to hold up the Larry O'Brien trophy, you're going to look at him and say, that's a guy that can help us get there. And maybe that's not a, I think where Jeremy's more coming from is like that. That's not the fairest way to look at it. Cause that's realistically, that's not the way teams look at it. And that I know that intellectually, but I guess that's the part that I'm having trouble getting over. And we like always, you know, talk about like, well, it only takes like one desperate team who looks at him a certain way. And it's like, well, if you bring him in our system and he's like under, he's a clear number two and this and that, that's, so that's where I'm, I am siding with you on that issue. But I don't know. All it takes is one team.
Well, the one thing I just want to interject with, like with Randall, for example, I hear what you're saying. I guess, do I go Macri and Schmilk since it's both Johns?
Sure, go for it.
So Macri, I know what you're saying. I do think it's, if it's a team like the Blazers, for example, we certainly talked about...
Talked about them a lot, yeah.
Right. If you're Portland and one of your few options to get better as a team is to go get someone like Julius Randle, and you don't really have other opportunities to get better, are you just going to not go with Julius because of the fact that like you don't want him? I think that's the thing where... You want to build a contender. Every franchise wants to be a contender, but there are the steps involved. And this is something I've kind of got loaded in the chamber, which I can sort of give a taste for right now, which is John. I totally agree with you that there, well, maybe I wouldn't say 4 to 5 years, but I would say there is a window of time. Let's call it 2 to 3 years where the Knicks are not going to be contenders. They may not even be pretenders. There's going to be more of a slow build and then they will make some sort of move and then they will have to keep progressing from there. But that's the other thing that I want people to keep in mind as we talk about other signings, right? Like I see people who get very upset at the idea of Jalen Brunson. And I think, okay, well, are the Knicks going to be a contender by the end of his contract? Maybe not. Okay. If they're not going to be, then what is the significant concern? Most of it is Emmanuel Quickley focused. Most of it is just people being uncomfortable paying a guard, regardless what it is. Like, you have to take incremental steps to get to a point. I think you could look at a team like the Clippers, where maybe not the Clippers, the Nets. Let's, how about the Nets, right? When the Nets
interesting example these days.
But when the Nets sold the farm for the corpses and carcasses of Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, and they were then left destitute, there was probably a point in which they thought, this is rock bottom for us. We're not going to recover. It took a few years. I wouldn't say this is what they had in mind, but in 2019, going from the spot that they were in to landing two marquee free agents and it only took one promising season for people to be like, hey, this team is taking strides. It's just that things can switch on a dime. And if you get one guy in the building, it can then shift the other narrative. Because I don't know how many Lakers fans realistically thought when they were tanking for 3 years in a row to keep their pick, well, we could just sign LeBron James and then we could trade people for Anthony Davis. Like, it just, one move can then change everything. It's sure. Identifying what that move is.
Right. I agree with you. The problem is that, and like, even if you could trade Randall away, right, you're still not going to get a star player back. So you're basically kind of resetting that bar back down to zero, right, in terms of trying to get your next star. So let's say...
Or if it is a star, it's a star in name only, and it's a star that comes with whatever... I mean, we don't have to go through names, but like, you're not getting some really good back for Julius Randle. Let's say that.
Exactly. You're getting salary filler more so than anything else, right? So... Then when you look at this, if the next move per se, and Jeremy, I think I listened to what it was 24 or 25 the year when the next free agent class is up that you think has some legitimate stars in it. 25?
It's 25.
25. All right. So that's three off seasons from now, right? Mm-hmm. So the next move in theory then would be the trade for a star, right? and I know we've had this conversation, all three of us have had at different times, that shouldn't be your first move, right? Because that drains all your assets. And then it becomes extremely difficult to get the second guy. Because unless you're getting the new version of LeBron or Luka, you know, you can't just get like Luka and then somebody else. I mean, you can't just get like, you know, player 15th best in the league and then add player 40th best in the league, you're going to win. You need two players between 10 and 20 or 10 and 25, whatever you want, right? If you're not going to get a superstar, and I know you guys had that great conversation about who's a superstar, who's not, you still need two stars. If you have one of the superstars who are impossible to get, then maybe you can have a Chris Middleton as your second banana, right? But if you don't have Giannis, Chris Middleton can't be your second banana if your best player is the 12th best player or 14th best player in the league, right? You need somebody better than that as your second banana.
I think it's interesting watching these conference finals because we're kind of seeing, maybe this is just my thought on this. I think you're seeing four teams who are doing it, who did it in very different ways. I mean, you have the Mavs who I think have, like you said, like you have Luka and then the next best player on the Mavs, probably, I guess it would be Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson is the, I don't know, is he the 50th best player in the league? Is he the 60th best player in the league?
Something like that.
Yeah, but, and granted, it does, none of this works without Luka. It is a system that works. It makes sense. Like, and I think that's the thing the four teams have in common. The Warriors obviously have a system that makes sense because they have incredible personnel and they've been doing it for almost a decade. You know, and then you have the Heat who are not attacking this in a traditional way, and they have one top 15 player, I would say.
Maybe even only top 15, 20.
Bam's taking, there's a little shine bloom off that rose after these playoffs. I mean, Bam's like top 30.
Yeah, the Heat are almost an exception. I have trouble using the Heat as a thing you want to copy. It just seems it's so out of character for the league. It's hard for me to figure out
and it's
exactly how you copy that.
Best coach in the league who figures out how to make a functional, well, we shouldn't talk about functional offenses after game five, but like a lot
great
of the
on
time
defense, like all that stuff.
Yeah, no, and then you have Boston who has a superstar, mea culpa.
Oh, he's in.
He's in. Nice. Listen, I mean, I'm not going to argue at this point. I mean, the guy, he's proven it. Even though he's had some not great games since we've had that conversation. Anyway, he's a top 10 player in the league. And then you got Jaylen Brown, who is a top 25 player. To make it fair. And then, you know, again, some other nice players. So I don't know. I think, and you look around the league, like there aren't, like, who's the super team next year? I mean, who's the team that everybody's going to be looking at and be like, oh my God, we're not going to be able to beat that team. So I think maybe, I'm not saying we have to adjust our definition of like what it takes to build a contender because it still takes a lot of talent that the Knicks do not have. But once upon a time, I remember Jeremy and I in the early days of this podcast would have these conversations where it's like, okay, how are we going to get two of the top or three of the top 15 players in the league? Because if you don't have that, you're not going to win anything. Now I think it's more like there are different ways to at least get in the conversation. Is that fair?
I think so. I mean, here's the other thing too. If you are the Knicks and you're willing to stay patient for an off season, two off seasons, let's say, as time goes on, your assets, the players that are younger are going to hopefully, knock on wood, get better. As they get better, their value increases. As the players who are stars on the open market, as their contracts wind down, their value often lessens. So if you can find an equal point where the value of the players on your team exceeds the star talent's dwindling contract situation, then you are able to strike and it's not like a gut punch. And I think that's the one thing, that's why when I see a lot of fans wanting to kind of go in on this big trade, Schmilk, 100%. Like if you go in and get like a top 30 guy right now, it's kind of like a bridge to nowhere. If the Knicks did that, I would actually even more agree with you about like the whole no man's land type of philosophy. And yet it would still be finding a way to go and upgrade your team. And then you can always flip that player. Cause if the Knicks sign or trade for a player or even draft them, it doesn't mean that they're here forever. They could very easily then be moved as well. Like we saw the Knicks turn Dennis Smith Jr. and a second round pick into Derrick Rose. Yeah. I'd be very curious if the Knicks are turning Derrick Rose into someone else. And if that someone else is then flipped into someone, like, you keep trading up and up and up. And at a certain point, that's the whole point. You're playing the long game. You got to focus on what the future might bring. And so as the Knicks kind of go about it, it's just like, how can you take that next step? And then eventually, when the time's right and everything aligns and you don't spend too much to get someone, are you able to keep and move forward?
No, agree. 100%. I'm with you. Go ahead, John.
I want to get your thought on this, because this is another area where I think we did, logically speaking, and we talked about this. And again, I agree with you. On paper, it makes no sense to make a trade for, I mean, let's put a name to it, to make a trade for Donovan Mitchell like this offseason. That being said, if they got him, and God knows they would have to give up a lot and then some to get him, like, are we really to sit here and believe that another star would not figure out a way to force his way here within the next, I don't know, 18 months? I understand, like, yes, there's a question of like, what assets are you left with? But like, And this is where I go back and forth, like how much in assets do the Knicks have? And I agree with you that the point about like the assets are not at the place now where they're fully appreciated, but hey, they're not done compiling that. So they have a draft pick coming up in less than a month in which they could draft, hopefully, another guy who appreciates considerably in value. Like, we don't know how the package is going to look. We don't know what's going to be left over. We don't know how much what is left over is going to continue to appreciate in value. Or appreciate in value. Like, if they get Brunson, does he factor into this as either like a third cog or a piece to trade? Like, that's why I think we a lot of times in the NBA, you look at a situation on paper and you say, okay, there's no way this could get from point A to point, you know, whatever point down the line. And then you turn around and you look up and be like, crazier things have happened. You know what I mean? John, what are your thoughts on that?
No, look, I agree with you in a lot of ways. But I think where I'm kind of at is that, in my opinion, I still think you kind of need the two stars, right? I think that has to be your goal. It's hard to get one and then kind of try to figure it out. I think that's tough. And it's hard to sustain that way, too.
I agree.
Look at all the best teams in the league. You need two, you know, all-star players on your team, okay?
Two all-stars. Yes, that is. I think I would agree with that.
You don't need necessarily two All-NBA guys. I think that's probably a little bit strong, but you need one. How about one All-NBA and one All-Star? How does that sound?
I agree. I would agree with that.
Well, my question, though, is why do you hate RJ Barrett?
You know, I knew it was going to come to this. Mm. Do you guys want to do this now?
Well, we could, but you can do the one thing I'll say, if you look at all four teams that are left standing, three of them have superstars that are homegrown.
Yeah.
And then you look at Miami and just, this is their second trip in 3 years to the Eastern Conference Finals. And a player like Jimmy Butler, who we're all on the same page. I don't necessarily view him as a superstar. I view him as a star who can have a superstar impact when it matters. Mm-hmm. But if that's like, but then if a, is that basically a runaround way of saying he's a superstar? I don't know. I don't think so. But there has to be an emphasis, but it doesn't have to be the only thing, because then
Bam's homegrown. I know he's not their number one,
but if he's a defensive player of the year candidate and he is the backbone of a lot of what they do on.
But does Jimmy, does Jimmy force his way there without, he forced his way there because of the infrastructure. Bam is a big part of that infrastructure. So I think you say three out of four. I think you could even kind of like say three and a half out of four, right? Because Bam is such a big part of it.
He's foundational, but he's not. No,
I agree.
He's not that superstar effect. And I think, again, if the Sixers pick Jimmy Butler over Ben Simmons, then the Heat are where? Not in the Eastern Conference Finals, because they're left kind of floundering and figure out what to do. But so it does start internally. But then you look at the Raptors and what they did with their championship run. They didn't have really any homegrown, like quote unquote homegrown guys, and they didn't have a single lottery pick that was on their team. So
doesn't Kyle Lowry kind of, I know, obviously he was,
he's below,
when they got him, he was considered the 30th best point guard in the league. I don't even know.
Sure. And they also used their homeroom guy in DeRozan to get Kawhi.
But they focused internally.
That's Siakam. Don't forget Siakam.
Yeah,
sure. Siakam. But then Siakam at the time also, and to an extent, like, he's not a first option. He was able to thrive off of having these guys. So that's really it, where if you can line these things up and look internally, it's like, I don't really know what else the Knicks can do other than just draft smartly and keep their eyes peeled. Because what people would say is, well, tank. And the Knicks just aren't going to do that because of the fact that it's not going to happen. And the reason it's not going to happen is because the Knicks and their front office aren't going to focus on ways of moving backwards.
They're not.
And then in the hopes of, you know, I know it's a great draft, right? But then if that's the case, if there are teams that are better than the Knicks and they wind up in a similar position next year, is that really the worst position to be in? I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think
I'll
so
say
at
this
all.
Though, and I think this is now the conversation to have, and we could talk about RJ Barrett specifically if you want, but then how do you, between now and 2025, when you have that shot at the free agent class, how do you best handle your business, right? What's the best way to go about things in terms of player deployment and how you're operating to maximize your chance to land those two stars? And I agree, developing the young guys has to be number one. A, either they develop into a star themselves, or they develop so well that you can then package them for a true star at some point. So that's number one. So then you get back to, all right, well, it's development of the young guys. And I think, despite what people like to yell about Tom Thibodeau about not playing the young guys, he actually has developed the Knicks' young players pretty well.
He's done a pretty good job.
Any other regime. So aren't we at the point now, though, where we've seen these young guys play, where even if it's at the expense of a few wins, these guys should play a little bit more? And look, the Knicks would be in a much better spot. You guys went through all the trades in your podcast, right? The Knicks were slotted in at the 7th spot this year instead of 12th, right? That's only a few losses. Wouldn't they be in a much, much better spot with the chance to grab a Shaden Sharpe, with the chance to grab...
I understand what you're saying. So, well, 7th in terms of, instead of 11th in the draft.
Yeah, you know, okay. I'm not saying tank, but do you have to... You know, play Alec Burks 34 minutes to maximize three wins to win 37 games instead of 33, which cost you 4 or 5 draft spots, which legitimately reduces your chance of obtaining a superstar on the cheap. And this is kind of my thing here. You know, eventually the Knicks had to get a superstar on the cheap. And when I say on the cheap, I mean through free agency, just money, or through the draft, just a pick.
You need to have found money somewhere, right? Whether it's you draft it, whether it's, right, you find Kyle Lowry off the scrap heap and he turns into an all NBA.
You have Kawhi Leonard holding out with a fake injury. Like, some crazy stuff has to happen.
And we thought, and that's what makes, not to pile on Randall.
No, the Randall thing. Absolutely.
That's what makes the Randall thing so disappointing.
You thought he was found money.
That was the found money. Mm-hmm. And then listen, and maybe he reverts. He did it once, right? He bounced back once. You never know. Crazy things have happened. I guess what I'm leaning towards is, like, I don't think it's impossible to have a situation with the Knicks where they get something. Like, even if you look at, like, Fred VanVleet, like, they didn't get Fred VanVleet. But at the time, Fred VanVleet was looked at as, like, it's an overpay, right? To get him at whatever the contract was. Like, if the Knicks had got, like, well, you're paying a lot of money for it. Now...
Well, I think either VanVleet or Gordon Hayward, right? Either of those guys would kind of qualify in this conversation.
Well,
right?
Except Hayward would probably not have been the best because of the injury situation.
Well, of course. Yeah, that's fair.
But, like, I don't know. If you get Jalen Brunson, like, what is everybody saying about the Brunson signing? Well, it's a lot of money for a little guard. You know, he plays alongside Luka, this, that, and the other thing. Like, if Jalen Brunson comes here next year and makes an all-star team, like Fred VanVleet did last season, I'm not saying Jalen Brunson is Fred VanVleet, but I'm also saying, like, the guy's played now how many playoff games?
No, I think that's fair.
17, 18.
18th tonight, yeah.
Yeah, and he's averaged, I don't know what his exact average, but, like, he's put up numbers that would be like, okay, yeah, that guy might be an all-star. Like, I think it's not, there is a possibility to do it. I think this draft pick is huge. And then to get to the RJ conversation, which I think is a good place to get to at this point.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey guys, quick break to tell you about Factor. Factor makes it easy to eat clean 24/7 with fresh, never frozen, prepared meals that are so delicious you wouldn't believe they're actually good for you. Factor saves you time by delivering chef-crafted meals to your doorstep, eliminating the hassle of grocery shopping and meal prep. Not to mention cleanup, no dishes to wash here. Each Factor meal arrives pre-prepared and ready to eat in 2 minutes. That's even faster than ordering in. Factor tackles the tough stuff, so I don't have to. Their registered dietitians and expert chefs work hand in hand to create meals with nutritious ingredients. And with 29 meal options each week, I'm never bored. Going off script for this next part to tell you just how convenient and delicious I've found Factor. My to-do list is usually never ending, whether it's producing this show, posting my own show final review, preparing a proposal in Long Beach, doing my taxes, or whatever else. I rarely have time for meal prep. When Factor sent me a box to test out, I chose the extra protein option. They sent me a week's worth of meals, and I had no idea just how convenient this was going to be. Each meal comes pre-prepared. You just put it in the microwave for 2 minutes, wait another 2 minutes for it to cool down, and boom, in 4 minutes, my meal is ready and it's delicious as well. Last night while I was editing this podcast, I heated up the pork shepherd's pie with white cheddar, Yukon mash, and roasted green beans. Not only was the prep time non-existent, but I was able to get a lunch break in and still get the podcast out for all of you to hear without taking a significant break. They have plenty of other meal options as well. There's vegan and veggie meals, keto, low-calorie options, cold pressure juices, smoothies, energy bites, plant-based bars, extra protein, the one I chose, veggie sides, and more to keep you fueled and focused all day long. Don't hesitate. Head to go.factor75.com/filmschool120 and use promo code filmschool120 and get $120 off. That's code filmschool120 at go.factor75.com/filmschool120 for $120 off.
See, to me, this is the conversation that nobody wants to have, because we keep talking about, okay, if you mortgage everything to get the first star, then how do you get the second big guy? And I think the reason we're having that conversation is because neither you two or anybody else in Knicks land, if they're being honest with themselves, thinks that a combo of Donovan Mitchell or any other attainable star, right, via trade, attainable star, and RJ Barrett is winning anything. Not next year, not 3 years from now, not 5 years from now. And there's a reason for that. Like, we, like, it's just like they're not good enough. Well, so here's, Jeremy,
here's the beauty of it, though. We don't have to think about that right now, because if Donovan Mitchell's not going to be here,
not today, we don't.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. I think the reason why people don't want to have the conversation is because it's too early to have the conversation.
I'm not talking about that conversation. I'm talking about the conversation of, we right. start next. Donovan Mitchell starts the year on the Jazz. Great.
Yeah, no, I, yes.
And we get to the, well, when's the All-Star game is before the trade deadline, right?
It's after.
Oh, so then, okay.
It's after.
So this is a conversation really for next summer.
Yes.
And the conversation for next summer is RJ Barrett has made more progress and you have an opportunity to trade him straight up for Donovan Mitchell without trading anything else. And by that point, your other assets have appreciated. Obi Toppin's gotten a little bit better. Emmanuel Quickley's gotten a little bit better. Let's say one of the other young players has gotten a little bit better. Let's say you hit the draft pick. Let's say you got another top 10 pick coming in the lottery. All of a sudden, if you're Utah and Donovan Mitchell's like, okay, I gave it another year. I want out. I'm leaving in 2 years anyway, so you better trade me now. And I want to go to New York. And if you could trade him for RJ then, and then trade whatever other stuff for, I don't know, Joel Embiid or whoever that other big time star is. That's the conversation I don't think anybody wants to have
yet. Well, yeah. And, you know, Jeremy, real quick, you talked about these guys not fully appreciating yet, these young guys, right? So don't trade them now until they've fully appreciated to their value. Well, Barrett's about to hit that point, right? Because once he signs that extension and he plateaus a little bit,
It depends on what it is, though, John.
Well, I know, but you know what? You don't think RJ Barrett's going to want his $30 million a year, or whatever it is?
I'm sure he'll want it. But if the Knicks aren't comfortable doing it, and they also have a plan in mind for how they can sign him and then also create an environment centered with him in mind,
right?
Then I think he could certainly be up to it. I don't know him personally, though. Maybe he doesn't want that at all.
No,
he seems like someone who's
and all these players should try to maximize the amount of money they make. Sure. No question about it. Absolutely. So for me, that's kind of one of the things I want to talk about. Like, does it make more sense to try to find somebody that believes that RJ is going to be an eventual all-star NBA guy now?
This summer?
That star you know about? Like, or maybe it's at the trade deadline. Maybe RJ has a great, maybe RJ plays in the first 2 months next year like he played in the last 2 months last year or something like that. Which, by the way, still isn't as good as people point out, just for the record. But
it wasn't efficient. It wasn't efficient.
Yeah, I mean, I went through it. Do you know how many times RJ shot over 50% in a game last year?
Over 50%
in a game? Over 50%. He played in 70 games. How many times did he shoot over 50%?
I'll go 20.
13.
12. Okay. Once every 6 games. I mean, and that's 3 in October, by the way. 3 of those came in October before the season even got rolling.
Yeah, so that was his hot start.
That's poor.
It is.
It's poor.
And that reason is why I don't think you're going to find anyone who is going to give you what you think fair value, you meaning the Knicks,
yes,
what you think fair value is for RJ Barrett right now, which is why you shouldn't, I don't think you should trade him.
Absolutely not. No, I'm with you on that. But for me, and the reason I'm less bullish on RJ as other fans, you know, the one thing I've learned scouting in the NFL, right? Points and stats and performance is good. It's all about traits, man. Like traits. You draft traits. And RJ is a, what in the NFL you call a straight line player, right? He gets build up speed. He's a straight line player.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a lot of wiggle. The biggest thing about RJ and the thing that I think is eventually going to hold him back is his inability to create space, right? If you want to be a star in the NBA, you need to do one of two things. You need to be able to create space athletically at an elite level. That's either with explosiveness, with quickness, however you want to do it. One way or the other, create space. The other way you do it is by being an elite shooter. In my opinion, in the half court, I have not seen the athleticism necessary from RJ to create space on a consistent basis. Even his drives that he finishes, they're all contested. He doesn't clear shoulders. He doesn't drive past people. And that's why his shooting percentage at the rim is so poor, because he has to take such difficult shots because he doesn't create space on the initial drive, right? He does it well in the full court when he has a runway. And then we all know about his jump shot. It isn't where it needs to be. His pull-up game, you look at the clean the glass percentiles, it's not very good.
It's not great.
And keep in mind, his percentages aren't very good when teams are basically telling him to take a pull-up 16-footer whenever he wants off the dribble, and they don't care if he does it.
That's not in his bag right now, that pull-up 16-footer, which you kind of need. I think every elite wing at least needs to be able to pull that shot out if need be. I've eaten a lot of crow.
And then, John, real quick, let me say one more thing.
Yeah, sure.
We've seen him be able to attack drop defense as well. That's the one thing I think RJ does really well.
Yeah,
if against a pick and roll, if you play drop against him, you give him a runway to build up some speed, he can get to the lane, he can finish. I think he does well against that. But against switches, he doesn't attack mismatches well on switches. Occasionally, he'll bully ball against little guys. But otherwise, not great. And I think, you know, his most efficient part of his game is drawing fouls, right? And I think he does a good job against the line. The problem is that in the playoffs and in close games and fourth quarters, the end of games, the officials don't call those fouls as much. And the whole point of having a star player is to be a shot maker at the end of games to help you win close games. Why are the Knicks so bad in fourth quarters and close games this year? They didn't have a shot maker when teams turned the screws defensively in the final 6 minutes of the game. You know, Julius was that guy 2 years ago.
He was.
Derrick Rose was that guy 2 years ago. Well, Rose because of injury and Julius because he disappeared, they weren't there this year. You know, if those guys played at least in the fourth quarter the way they did the year ago, this team would have won 5 or 6 more games easily, just on close games and not blowing leads. But I just wonder, unless, again, the jump shot, somehow he pulls an elite jump shot out of his bag, which is not impossible. Anybody can do it. But I think that's a stretch to think that's going to happen at this point, given especially his 3 free throw percentage. He doesn't have great touch. He's a little bit stiff, like I said, more of a straight line guy. I just have trouble seeing him be able to be that guy at the end of games to create a shot for a high percentage shot for himself to close out games and defenses in the half court, turn up the screws, and the officials aren't going to give those less than obvious foul calls in the lane. And that's my I hate RJ, which I really
I was about to say,
because yeah. I do think, John, by the way, when his career is over, he might make one or two All-Star games. That's possible. Like, he might have a great 3 months and make an All-Star game here or there, but I'm just not sure he's ever going to break through that top 50 player in the league type of conversation.
Well, what's great about this, John, is like, we don't have to ask you why you hate RJ Barrett, because you just told us. very out front about it.
I just want to say, in terms of, so a lot to unpack. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. I think the thing with RJ as well is also the players who are around him. Like if we're talking about Julius Randle and all the things that have gone wrong, and the fact that with Mitchell Robinson, there is what, negative space as well when it comes to, like, he's often just found in the dunker spot or underneath the basket. It can be a challenge for RJ to be as efficient as he needs to be. It's a problem. I will say though, that it's not the shot making that was an issue in my mind for a lot of the losses. A lot of it did fall on Tibbs' shoulders. And we have proof of that, because when he was with Minnesota, we saw a ton of blown leads. And it wasn't this opportunity where it was like, hey, the Knicks could have like stolen these games. It didn't feel like that. It oftentimes felt like, let me go back to old reliable, which was a bunch of crappy veterans who like to not play with pace, who like to basically let the lead dwindle. It felt like they were playing preventative basketball. They weren't trying to go on offense. And then at a certain point,
I agree with that. That's fair.
Leads slip away so much, and there's so much inflexibility that it's like, well, maybe the young players should try. And if we go back to the conversation about picking between the 7th and the 11th and all that, I mean, at the end of the season, the Knicks were winning games mostly on the backs of the younger players. Mm-hmm. And then you could argue, well, then should they have even tried to develop? I mean, they should have tried to develop the players, but then the philosophy is, well, if you're pick hungry, then wouldn't you just stick with what you know is not working versus trying something that might work?
No, they had an elite tanking weapon.
And to me though, if you play the young guys and it works and you're good because you play the young guys, awesome. You win. Right. That's fantastic. That's great. I would have no problem with that.
But they did that after the All-Star break. Didn't they finish? I forget what the exact record was after the All-Star break, but it was decent.
It was like 12 and 11, something like that.
You also saw their schedule soften up a lot after the All-Star break too, which is also a big part of that.
There were some tough competition towards the end.
There were a couple games in there, but the tough stretch was the January to mid-February heading into the All-Star break.
When they absolutely fell.
3-17 is right. And a lot of that was veteran focused.
Let me say this about RJ. I will simplify it, I think, even more, which is that it's really tough to be a successful perimeter player in the NBA today who has the ball in your hands. You know, you're running the offense more or less, which is, I think, any all NBA, any all-star caliber wing player, like, generates a lot of their team's offense. It's really tough to do that if you don't have any kind of an off the dribble game from behind the arc. And I think Jimmy Butler is literally the only guy in the league today that you can say that about, where he is his team's engine and teams don't have to guard him if he's outside of 15 feet. I think Jimmy Butler is something of an anomaly. And I think I personally get a little bit too comfortable with RJ could just continue to model himself after Jimmy. That said, Jimmy Butler, when he was RJ's age, was still in college, you know? And it took him 3-4 seasons to start to really. Now, it's very easy for us as Knicks fans, because we love our team and we love our guys, and it's easy to like RJ Barrett, to assume that RJ Barrett has the work ethic that Jimmy Butler has or close to it. I'm a little more dubious of that, because Jimmy Butler, for everything we've been told, has like one of the greatest work ethics in like the history of basketball. So to assume that someone else has that, I think it might be a little bit much. That said, I do think RJ's work ethic is pretty good. And yeah, I think the reason we could say that is because we have seen some proof of the fact that, like, this guy, and I said it all up and down, he was terrible his rookie year. He was awful. He didn't deserve to make one of the all rookie teams. He wasn't one of the 10 best rookies. Like, I know his situation was crap and the spacing was awful, but like, he wasn't good. He got better. He adjusted as a second year player. I'm not putting it past him to continue to develop the playmaking parts of his game, the shooting parts of his game, maybe a little bit more off the dribble stuff. Again, doesn't need to be Steph Curry out there, but like teams just can't constantly go under picks. That's really what we're talking about, right, John? Teams just can't, they can't just go under picks. And I get what you're saying about the playoffs and the free throws and the whole thing. I think he has a chance to be one of the, honestly, I'll give you a hot take. I think he has a chance to be the best wing foul drawer in the league at one point. I think he has that in him.
I'll buy that. All right, let me ask you, but before we move on from Mario, let me ask you guys this. If I put, you know, a pinky finger on the line, how many All-Star games does RJ Barrett make by the end of his career?
Oh, I've gone back and forth about this a few times with myself.
And I would put the over under a 2.5.
That's where I've said it in the past. I've said it at 2.5. Jeremy, you're a little higher than me, right?
I am. I originally had it at a much higher number than that. I'll go a little bit down, say 3.5, maybe 4.5. But I want to go back though, because I'm still kind of taken aback. So you think Terrence Davis had a better all rookie bid than RJ Barrett? I'm going to hold your feet to this.
Terrence Davis helped a winning team win basketball games.
But since when is the rookie of the year, any of those distinctions been in any way correlated with winning? Like Michael Carter Williams won the rookie of the year and played for the Sixers.
Yeah, but I think his look, we could go.
Clint came off the bench for 68 games, 68 of his 72 games off the bench.
Within Philly?
No, Terrence Davis in Toronto.
Oh, Terrence. Yeah, no, look, again, RJ had a lot more on his plate, but he was like the advanced stats, like the on off stats, like the efficiency stats, all of them painted him as one of the worst players in basketball his rookie year.
But then didn't that happen with someone like Anthony Edwards and suddenly he's the media darling?
He switched it about midway through. He started to become a somewhat helpful player. Listen, if they put him on one of the teams, I would have been okay with it. I would have been cool with it. I'd be fine.
It's more.
But that was not the soapbox that I was getting on.
I hear you. I heard it. I had to stick up for RJ Barrett. He's getting a beating on this podcast.
I'll tell you what. I'll go 3.5 too. 3.5 All-Star games.
All right. But by the way, guys, go ahead, Jeremy. I'm sorry.
There are two things and I don't think they're mutually exclusive. The front office can want to build with RJ Barrett, and the front office can also feel that at the end of the day, down the line, RJ doesn't have to be the answer for what they're doing.
Sure.
And I think we're still at the first point, which is just like getting the tools to develop him, to make him the impact player, seeing what you've got there. And it's why I certainly hope they can come to an agreement on an extension and that it's not ginormous and they can move forward. It's more that I think another thing to consider with RJ is a lot of it is in the NBA strength focused. And before, I hear you in terms of like speed and explosiveness, RJ certainly doesn't have that. But then I'm not making a comparison here, just more as an example, like Jimmy Butler is strong. Kawhi Leonard is strong. If RJ Barrett can continue to add strength to his frame, then he can be crafty enough and strong enough where he can bully other players and mismatches. And I think that's also where he has room to grow physically, as where he was when he started versus now. It seems like, I don't want to say night and day, but there's a stark difference. And
I just wish he was a little bit longer, Jeremy, to do that better. I wish he was just a little bit longer. If he is that like that Paul George or Kawhi length, I'd feel better about that outcome. You know what I mean?
I hear you. Absolutely. And he's a little bit shorter as well. So 100%.
No, look, and guys, I do not hate RJ Barrett. And again, the Knicks should not just dump him. They should pay him if it's a reasonable contract. And I think that kind of gets back to where we are. So guys, build assets, keep getting better. That's fine. But you can't let Mitch walk away for nothing then, right? But if you pay him, then you run into cap issues in 2 years. And, then you get to, John's boy Tibbs. Then you have to play the young guys. I was going nuts as much as everybody else. The fans were driving me nuts every game. If, Obi Toppin didn't play 38 minutes, people were ready to storm the garden with pitchforks. I was, driving me nuts. I couldn't take it anymore. But at some point, you have to do what maximizes your chance to achieve your ultimate goal. And I think right now they're kind of caught in between a little bit still in terms of how they're going about that. And I'm not sure there's a great way to do it, because I just feel like right now along the path they're at, and I think this goes back to our original conversation, they're waiting for lightning to strike. and you're just waiting to fall ass backwards into a star with the 11th or 12th pick in the draft. You're, you know, hoping you get cap space in 25 and a star is available. He doesn't resign and he wants to leave and he runs your way. I mean, as hard as it is to trade for a superstar, that's honestly the easier part of what the Knicks path to a championship is right now. And when that's the easy part for you, it's really, really hard. And I want to be convinced that it's not that hard. And maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree. Maybe it just is. And that's how the NBA works.
Look, here's ultimately why I think they're in a better position than other teams is there is zero chance that Donovan Mitchell or, you know, any other, and like, I'm sorry, I respect Reggie Miller. I respect Stan Van Gundy, like them constantly getting on this thing where they're like, nobody wants to come to the Knicks, this, that, and the other thing. I think we have to consider the fact that at least this regime, this coach, like what they have going on, like it's the first time in pretty much 20 years that they've been looked at as competent, other than when Donnie Walsh was here. And when Donnie Walsh was here, like they did get a superstar. They got Melo. So I'm not sure I agree with their point that like nobody is ever going to want to come to the Knicks. Somewhat like that is not the situation in most other NBA cities. So I think
25 markets, like there's 25 markets where teams will not force their way to that market. You're right.
Exactly.
And that makes New York different. I agree with you.
Yeah. And so we've been saying it for 2 years now, just get decent, get good at playing basketball games. And someone at some point will look at you and say, I want to go there. And then,
but here's the problem, John, here's the problem by doing that. You're erasing the opportunity to get a homegrown star through the draft.
So,
well, you're not, you are, and you're not though.
Because you're certainly reducing it.
Well,
you're certainly reducing
it. Sure. But like Miami,
you're not getting a top five.
What did Miami do in order to get Jimmy Butler? What were they doing preceding that? Did they have any top five picks the year that they went 10-31 as the start? They then went 31-10.
Yeah.
I think that if you are a good team, players are interested. It was the big reason why when it was Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and the Knicks have double max cap space and RJ Barrett, it wasn't like, hey, even if Zion had landed in New York, you're telling me that Kyrie Irving, who was determined to go to Brooklyn regardless, and that was just terrible reporting and intel that Steve Mills and Scott Perry seemed to have. But let's say they had that intel and they were still comfortable with the opportunity. And let's say that with Zion in the building, they're listening, right? You're still going from whatever situation you're in to the worst team in the NBA that year. And if you are able to at least show that you're good enough, right? Like the Clippers, why did Kawhi want to go there? Well, he wanted to be near his home. Would he have gone there if they had the worst record in the NBA? I don't think so. They wouldn't have had the supporting cast. LeBron going to the Lakers when they were that crappy was like, it's completely something we just have not seen and probably won't see for a very long time. And I just think that you're talking about like how you structure it. Here's how you do it. If you're the Knicks, you obviously build as smartly as you possibly can financially. What does that mean? It means don't give crazy contracts out to players where you feel like they'll fall short. That's the RJ situation. I've talked before how I love RJ. My heart says give him the max. My head says not so fast. That's not the right thing. With Mitchell Robinson, they're not even going to run into a salary cap issue with him per se. It's more, do they want to commit to Mitch as Mitch? Do they want to better allocate that money? Because I don't think the problem with them is we don't want to pay a center, period. I think it's we're not in love with Mitchell Robinson and we think that we could probably better get a player who's of similar caliber for around the same cost or cheaper and turn Mitch into another player or a traded player exception, which turns into another player, whatever it is. But if you're the Knicks and you are able to basically design your contracts so that they decline every year, and then you bring in someone like a Donovan Mitchell type, and then you walk into the 2025 season where cap space, hopefully, if everything is being reported, explodes with the new TV deal. And then you don't have to make room to get another star. You basically just slot a guy in and they say, like, you're telling me that the Knicks, who look good, they've looked consistent. There's something that's like kind of being built here and real. I can just walk there. And we could just go from there. It's exactly what Kevin Durant did. Mind you, the Warriors were a little bit better than where the Knicks would be in the year 2025. But you're at that point where then you get that player, you can go over the salary cap. You have a lot of your future picks at this point. And if you're going over the salary cap after you've already signed that star, you then maybe can flip that salary for another star. Right. And then you can go in and truly do it. And then you're looking at a situation where it's like, well, we've got one guy that we traded for a few years back, right? Let's say this is 2026. Got one guy we traded for in 2023 or 2024. We signed another guy in free agency. And then from there, we're able to then leverage our going above the cap to sign another player. It reminds me of the Celtics. Obviously, the reason I say it reminds me of the Celtics isn't because of the Jason Tatum angle. No, it's the Al Horford angle and then getting Gordon Hayward. And then obviously they made a great trade that worked out for them and they got Jason Tatum from drafting smartly and Jaylen Brown, and they are where they're at now. But it started with, let's just get a good player in the building. And then we'll get another good player in the building, and then we'll keep accumulating talent. And it might take a few years, but we're going to get to the point where we feel comfortable and we can be a contender. And now with them being one win away from making the NBA finals for the first time in over 10 years, it starts to make sense. But they don't have the Jason Tatum. They don't have the Jaylen Brown. They need to find ways of getting...
Well, they might, you know, they might have the Jaylen Brown.
They might. 100%. Why do I hate RJ Barrett?
Exactly. Seriously, man. Why do you?
But that's the thing. If we're
talking RJ defender on this,
if we're talking about playing the long game and multiple stars and everything, then yes, I think actually to go back to Schmilk, your initial point, 4 to 5 years for true contention, maybe that's not so far off. But maybe you can at least find a sweet spot where you're on the upswing. You're showing like we're a pretender, but we're knocking on the door. We could get there. We just need a little bit of help. That's if you could plan for 2025 and then do whatever you need to do after that, and we'll see how that becomes more clear this year, next year, and the year after, that's your pathway.